You're tuned in to All The Best, bringing you engaging audio narratives from emerging Australian storytellers every week. All The Best is proudly sponsored by Bank Australia. Join the bank with clean money. Is the money in your bank doing harm or good? Bank Australia says their money is clean because they guarantee their customers' money will not be loaned to industries that do harm. Industries like coal, weapons, gambling, tobacco, and the live animal export trade. Instead, Bank Australia's customers' money is invested in projects that create positive impact, such as community renewable energy, disability housing, and safe and sustainable housing for people at risk of homelessness and domestic violence. Is your bank aligned with your values? If not, learn more. Search Bank Australia Clean Money. Bank Australia is a proud sponsor of FBI Radio. Hi, I'm Samantha Groth. In this episode of All The Best, we're looking back at the first time we crossed unfamiliar territory. Talise starts us off by questioning what a first time is supposed to be. Heads up, there are adult themes in this story.
Friday night, and I'm in my living room with a group of friends. We're a bunch of women in our 20s to 30s, casually having a couple of glasses of wine, and we start sharing stories about our first time.
First time's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds you of like that feeling again. It's been, like I said, it's been a while.
First time I had any kind of sexual experience was when I was 18. And it's super glamorous. I got figured in a club.
I've always felt a bit weird when the topic of virginity comes up.
Basically, to like stretch it out. In the meantime, she was just having that's
world. Tonight, I could speak freely, but for many years, I'd lied to my friends about the first time I'd had sex.
It was the first time I've ever been so vulnerable.
It's the beginning of the sex life. We used to smoke weed all the time. And like,
everyone knew me as the virgin. The highly sexual woman who swayed and walked through friendship groups, who ironically was still a virgin.
Yes, right?
Yeah, like it's so much.
Well, I'm just missing that.
For such a long time, it's defined me, and I feared that telling the truth and letting people know that I had in fact lost my heteronormative virginity, it would somehow tarnish what made me different. There was a reason that I kept it to myself. You always wanted what was best for me. You once told me that you raised me through two sides of your personality. One side, the liberal woman who wanted me to explore, and the other side, that was birthed of your culture, feared what would happen if you let me run free. Was on the toilet, 12 years old and minding my own business, and suddenly there was blood, and apparently that was the end. You're a woman now, you have to act like a lady, was said down to me through a row of smiling teeth. That means you have to wear skirts more, you can't be muddy all the time, and you need to stop climbing trees with your brother. I remember those words so clearly. I sat there and I cried. The fact that I was bleeding now somehow meant that I was a woman. And being a woman meant that I couldn't be who I wanted to be. The other women in my life seemed to think that this was a good thing. Being a woman meant I had to wear dresses that scratched me, sit with my legs crossed, that I now had to protect myself from men.
Sexual and be empowered, and you know, we don't need feminism anymore. That sort of, you're already empowered, you're already, we passed the 80s, we passed the 70s, we passed the burn the bra movements, and that's what a lot of older, I think, society perceives to be the case.
Your culture was the part of you that told you that my purity preserved my status, my feminine holding in the world, and my worth. Because of this, I questioned my femininity from a young age, constantly pushing the boundaries placed around me. This is a side that told me not to allow men to defile me before promising themselves to me. So many of the conversations that followed this revolved around my virginity. I tried to accept this, but it felt so unfair. There was always so much dialogue surrounding this idea of purity. This virginal character that glided through crowds, blushing and giggling and never quite revealing herself fully. That wasn't me.
Virgin anymore? I don't know, like, that I was a slut in his eyes, that I'd slept with all of his friends, which I didn't. Like, some of those people I didn't know he was friends with, and I did not sleep with all of his friends, but this is the story he's made.
I could never understand why my brother wasn't made to feel the same way. Never told that lovers would use him and discard him, and that would make him less appealing to the next partner. The discourse surrounding my purity didn't taint my worth, it tainted my understanding of my worth, and for that, I couldn't blindly follow the notion of virginity.
Women can't outwardly express or display elements of their sexuality. Like, to go back to the concept of purity, I think about the idea of wedding.
I held out. I held out for so long. All my friends had already done it. I waited. I waited for the right guy, the right moment, the right setting, the right amount of candles. And then one day, I was away from everyone, from you. I was traveling overseas and it happened. In the least romantic setting ever. I met a guy on my last night in Peru, and we decided to steal a couple of beers from the hostel fridge. Everyone had drifted off, and we got drunk and silly. We finally decided to go to sleep, and he followed me. Got into my bed, we automatically started to remove our clothes. I'd been in this situation before, but for some reason, I accepted that I just wanted it to be done. And then I'd decide how I felt. He moved my underwear aside, asked me if I was sure, and then...
romanticize it. Yeah, like you want to have a romanticized version to tell people of how you lost your virginity, I guess, maybe. Well, for me personally, I'm not going to...
I wasn't even sure if it had happened.
It was really painful and
was it done? Had I lost everything?
The concept of purity is, you know, highly sought after in mythological.
I remember the first time I told you that I was sleeping with a partner. I was 22 and I told you that I loved him and that he loved me. Your body shook, you cried, and you told me that I'd spoiled myself. You were in so much pain because you genuinely believed that I was now ruined.
But I think the concept of purity really falls into that space. And as we've grown up through
I know that as a parent you weren't given a manual. I know you tried to do the best you could, and I am not blaming you. You were a great mom, and you taught me as you had been taught. But I am not worthless. I've not forfeited who I am because I made choices about my body. I understand your culture is different and you don't quite understand, but I hope one day you'll accept me. I am still worth something.
That story was produced by Talise. The supervising producer was Selena Shannon. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Samantha Groth. All the Best exists because we want emerging Australian storytellers to learn how to make audio stories, like the ones you're hearing today. You can pitch to us from any part of Australia, and we'll pair you with one of our supervising producers. Email contact at allthebestradio.com. We're here if audio making is unfamiliar territory to you. Elsie's not a teenager anymore, but she recently found a story she wrote when she was one. It's about a holiday her family goes on every year, and this particular one felt different.
Inverloch. For me, it was, and probably always will be, a place that shapes my summers. Ever since I can remember, on the second week of January, the van would be packed with surfboards and wetsuits, and the family would drive the 2 hours it takes to journey from our gravel driveway to the sand-stained track of the camping ground. The summer I was 17 is the most vivid, most likely because I've replayed it in my mind too often to count, refining the details each time and delighting in the feeling of cool sand and hot sun it brings rushing back, a place where bare feet and bikinis are dress code and vegans are regularly splattered by sausage fat. This energetic and tranquil world is a reprieve, somewhere to unravel. A world in which I've kept a secluded memory under each grain of sand, down each beach trail, beneath each wave. It's not a small camping ground, but the same people seem to gravitate together each year. These are the people with which I spend just a few short weeks, but in turn, with the tricks of the warm air, come to feel closer to than anyone else. It's what propels us to exchange numbers each year, promising to meet up. But the magic of summer never quite lingers into the colder months. As we set up the campsite on that most memorable year, Jake, Bridie and Freddie appear as if not a day has passed since the last time we spoke. In between dragging out the gear and arguing over whose tent goes where, we yell and laugh and bicker, layering our stories from the last 12 months, one on top of the other. As the site starts to resemble somewhat of a home, bikes leaning, towels everywhere, someone pipes up that they're hanging for some fish and chips. As quick as the words hit the air, Dad is slamming the car door, driving to town to collect the tightly wrapped butcher's paper. There we sit that night, along with the neighbouring campers we share our lives with for those limited days. A mass of us, around the foldable table, eating immeasurable amounts of potato and batter. We're the four seasons, constantly changing, and at times both full of lightning and sunshine. Jake and I draw closer than the rest, each year building upon the last. There's a breath held, standing on a cliff edge, waiting to dive in, hoping that the sun and salt will somehow mix together to make something, anything happen. The 2 weeks stretch before us, too quickly retracting. It seems as every instant passes, the nights try and outdo the days and the days the nights. Each moment is filled with something that outshines the last. Nearly every day we venture to the shallows of the inlet, down the dirt track to the beach like a trail of ants, dousing ourselves in another layer of salt and sea. We stand on the edge knowing the waiting chill, dipping in a toe or two, thrilling at the idea of diving beneath its surface, having the water engulf us completely. Someone makes the first move, giving way to the rest. And there we stay, the salt water making our lips grow pruney. From the time we call the beach our home, the days fill with cricket matches, jumping from the jetty, attempts to catch something, anything on a hook, swims to the sandbar to stand in the middle of the sea. Most of all, they're brimmed with laughter and happy eyes, side glances and nervous giggles. The days are euphoric, but it's the nights that I look forward to the most. The underage drinking and the conversations that are fanned for heat, eager to keep alive. I force myself to enjoy the taste of beer, the four of us sharing memories and stories we've never thought to before, the warm air and warm cans eroding our fears and judgment. Nothing to hide. One night, filled with aimless adventures, Jake, Bridie, Freddie and I wander out to the inlet flats that border the camping ground. Each year we return to find the tide has pushed the sand closer, threatening to engulf this little world entirely. It's on these flats that crabs gather as the tide pulls away. We sit in a circle in the moonlight, listening to the scuttling and marching until one of us breaks rank, rushing for the water. Before long, we've all stripped off and dived in, wary of crushing the small crabs as we cross their territory into the sea. We splash and dunk each other, disturbing the cool, calm water that shimmers in the moonlight. At one point, Jake picks me up out of the water and throws me back in again. There's a moment in the darkness, underwater, where I don't know which way is up. But as I feel through the void for his fingers, they find mine, pulling me through the surface again. We hold on to each other, laughing hysterically at nothing in particular and wiping the water from our eyes. The bright night sky watching over. It's these moments with life so close to the surface, you can touch it, taste it. That indescribable rush making every breath, every moment, a miracle to be marvelled at. We scramble out for our clothes, long after we start to shiver. The rest of the night passes in a whirl. The four of us playing snap in the middle of the main road, making sparkler bombs and copious amounts of two-minute noodles, daring to shower in the men's toilet block, and finally, wearily, we walk up the street in our pyjamas to see if the bakery is serving hot bread at 4 in the morning. Bridie and I promise each other we will spend every one of our summers at this beachside. A promise we wouldn't keep. In the early morning, we trudge back to our tents, laughing, feeling, and covered in sand. The coming months would bring a failed fling between Jake and I and jarring catch-ups with Bridie, and licenses that meant we were no longer tethered to our parents. We were racing towards adulthood, expanding the possibilities of our summer days, and yet somewhat restricting them as well. That year, like many times before, I take a last idling walk up to the bluff. A ragged lookout point across the whole inlet, Eagles Rock and Venus Bay buried in the horizon. It's a step away from the campground, two from the town and the world beyond, with only paddocks and the sea stretching out below. Up there, I take a breath, taking in more than one sunset as it slips into the sea.
Elsie Bath produced that piece. Jordan Fennell was the supervising producer. Are you afraid of the dark? Paul is.
Gather round, folks. Take a seat. Close your eyes. What can you see? Is it the back of your eyelids or a consuming darkness? Are you bumbling through the unknown, lost and afraid? Are you scared of what might be out there, hiding under your bed, outside your window, or maybe right behind you? Because I am. Do you remember it like I do? Sitting around a campfire, or perhaps sitting on the bottom of a bunk bed. You're in a circle of friends, chatting away. They're telling a ghost story. You close your eyes in fear. You can feel beads of sweat forming on your brow. A dagger plunges down your spinal column from your brain to the pit of your stomach. You hate ghost stories. Yet, here you are. Finally, when your head hits the pillow, pictures of the most horrific beasts and ghouls flood your imagination. Perhaps I could blame my siblings and their ghost stories for my long-standing fear.
Ah, the wilderness. So empty, so free. I think I just heard a branch now.
Hey, don't say that. It's scary out here.
Oh, you think it's scary out here? You haven't seen anything yet. Who wants to hear a ghost story?
I do.
So, this story is about a young boy. Not quite similar to your age, little bro.
Oh, no.
A young boy was having trouble sleeping, so he went downstairs to the fridge to make himself a warm glass of milk and snuck in 3 cookies on the way back to bed. It was a rainy night, and there was a heavy spot of rain making a loud dripping sound just next to his head. Drip, 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 the water went. The rain kept pouring and the drip kept dripping and it kept the boy from sleeping. The noise was keeping him awake. The boy stared out into the pitch black and tried to close his eyes. A pang of fear hit the boy. His father always told him that bumps in the night were just the house sighing. His father said they were more common when it rained. It was just a bump, nothing more, his father would say. The boy tried to ignore it, but he couldn't. The bumps were menacing and frightening. They were forceful and thunderous, and with each bump, a chill ran down the boy's spine. And then it stopped. The possibilities of what it could have been ran through the boy's mind. They had a neighbour who was trying to curb a smoking addiction. Some nights he'd spend chopping wood in the backyard. Of course it wasn't that. The boy knew someone was in the house. But how could they be? His parents had always said their house was secure and they'd protect him from anyone who entered the house. And, well, maybe they did. Footsteps started at the bottom of the staircase and grew louder as whoever it was making their way to his room. The boy knew his parents' footsteps, and they weren't the footsteps of anyone he knew. They were lumbering, deliberate and sinister steps, and they were getting closer and closer. The boy was paralyzed with fear. He had nowhere to go. He couldn't see through the darkness, and the steps were getting louder and louder. As the frightened steps reached his door, they stopped, and whatever it was pushed open his bedroom door. The boy was in complete shock. He couldn't move. He couldn't see. What passed through the doorway into his room was something that was completely inhuman. It barely fit through the doorway with its hulking figure and its grotesque horned head. It carried with it 2 familiar figures in the taloned grasp that resembled hands. It had ripped his parents apart with its talons, and now it was coming for the boy. It moved towards the boy and pulled him into its grip, and the boy screamed for his life. End of story.
Was that it? That wasn't scary at all.
Yeah, not scary at all.
Even to this day, I'm still afraid of the dark. Horror movies will always give me the heebie-jeebies. The dark is a scary place. It might never stop scaring you. I mean, after all, it's just a movie, right?
That story was by Paul Waxman. The supervising producers were Aaron Dick and Alison Chan. You've been tuned into All the Best, bringing you engaging audio narratives from emerging Australian storytellers every week. All the Best is proudly sponsored by Bank Australia. Join the bank with clean money. Is the money in your bank doing harm or good? Bank Australia says their money is clean because they guarantee their customers' money will not be loaned to industries that do harm. Industries like coal, weapons, gambling, tobacco, and the live animal export trade. Instead, Bank Australia's customers' money is invested in projects that create positive impact, such as community renewable energy, disability housing, and safe and sustainable housing for people at risk of homelessness and domestic violence. Is your bank aligned with your values? If not, learn more. Search Bank Australia Clean Money. Bank Australia is a proud sponsor of FBI Radio. Would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SIN Community Coordinator is Aaron Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm Samantha Groff, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. And make sure you connect to us by subscribing to the podcast